You may approach. Mr. Nimmer, good morning to you.
Good morning. May it please the court, I am the respondent, John Nimmer, of this case. As the briefs are thorough, I will only summarize my arguments. The parties agree the Nebraska Attorney Safekeeping of Property Rule 3-501.15 requires three things. One, funds belonging to clients or third parties, third persons in connection with the legal representation must be kept in an attorney's trust account. Two, a lawyer's personal funds, except small amounts to cover bank charges, may not be deposited into the trust account. Excuse me, and number three, under Counsel for Discipline versus Wright, that's with a W, 277 Nebraska 709, that's a 2009 case, there's no time limit on when funds in the trust account, once those have become the attorney's, as in the case of unearned fees becoming earned fees, must be withdrawn.
Go ahead, Judge.
Do you think that the holding of Wright is that there literally is no time limit, or that it's a reasonable time, and the reasonable time had not expired?
I have looked at Wright, and honestly, I don't know the answer to that. I don't think it doesn't expressly say reasonable time. It just says that the rule does not require that those funds, Wright was not held accountable for not withdrawing those funds. So I guess that's a question for you all to decide. I didn't see that it expressly says that.
Does it make sense that there could be no limitation?
No, I don't think that makes sense, but I'm not the one that's determining the meaning of the rule. I'm just saying that I don't see that it expressly says that. That could certainly be something that you may wish to do to clarify Wright going forward.
Thank you.
Sir, I understood you to be making an argument that there's no proof that the money wasn't earned fees, and that's sort of an underlying premise. Is that correct?
With respect to pre-2011 matters, and I'm going to just assume you've all read the briefs.
That's a fair assumption.
Okay, this pre-2011 matters, I was not able to explain specific transactions. I'm not challenging, other than admissibility, the veracity or the truthfulness of those bank records.
Right, and my question doesn't really go to a pre-2011 or a post-2011. My question is, there's no evidence that this is the sort of case where you withdrew money from a trust account and put it into an operating account as earned fees. There's no evidence of that. Isn't that right? You didn't withdraw money and put it into an operating account. You wrote a check directly on the trust account.
That is correct.
Okay.
That is correct. And one of the arguments that I've made, and that goes to the two areas that the rules disputed between the parties, is that there's no nothing in the rule that says that you cannot make, once those funds have become the attorney's, that you can't write the check to pay a business or personal expense. I concede it's not best practices. I can see that now. But some states have limits, like North Carolina, for example. They say that an attorney must write a check to himself and deposit it into an attorney's personal business account. Nebraska doesn't have any such limitation on how those fees may be withdrawn. I use the example in the brief of, let's say I get a check for $1,000 from a client. It's not my money. I put in the trust account. We all agree that's what must be done. Excuse me. At some point, that money has been earned. Let's say it's $5, $200 per hour, and I've earned that fee. Do I have to write a check for $1,000 to myself and put it into a personal or a business account, or is it permissible, say, to take $1,000 and write a check for office rent? Again, I can see it's not best practices, but I would also suggest that the rule doesn't prohibit that. The other area of disagreement is that third-party funds an attorney holds for others not in connection with the legal representation, I would argue, can be kept in the trust account, that the rule says doesn't say that you can't do that. I'm going to maybe go off on an aside here. There have been cases, and I can't remember off the top of my head the exact sites, that would say that a lawyer must act in his personal affairs under the same rules that he acts as an attorney. So that would mean, obviously, that you can't co-mingle. Let's say if you have funds that belong to a third person, but they're not in connection with the representation, you can't put that in your personal account or your business account. There's also, a Court of Appeals case, In Re Estate of Roth, I cited in the brief, 21 Nebraska Appellate 429, that's a 2013 case, that would suggest that even non-lawyers cannot commingle funds in their own personal account. So let's say you've got money that belongs to somebody else. You can't put it in your business account. You can't put it, this is not in connection with the representation, you can't put it in your personal account. According to the Council for Discipline's reading, you would not be able to put it in your attorney trust account because it's not in connection with the representation. So you're forced, even for relatively small matters, to open up another account or many accounts. I will say that the rule, though it requires third-party funds in connection with the representation to be placed in the trust account, attorney trust account, it doesn't prohibit fiduciary funds that don't belong, that are not in connection with the representation that a lawyer holds from being placed there.
Step back a little bit. What do you think the purpose of a trust account is?
It's to segregate and hold funds that belong to other people, whether they're clients or not, separate from your own funds.
Is there anything in the rules addressing client trust accounts that speaks to matters outside representation?
I didn't see anything that it talked about that.
So what do you ground your argument in?
My argument as to allowing third-party funds not in connection with the representation being placed in a trust account. There's some footnoted language in the rule that talks about there are certain situations a lawyer acting as a fiduciary may need to open up separate accounts, additional accounts.
You're talking about comments to the rules.
That's correct. Comments. There's also, I lost my train of thought there. There's that Exhibit 22 that was admitted at the hearing that is the form that the court uses when we do our annual trust account certification. That language talks about funds belonging to clients or third persons without the additional qualifier of in connection with the representation. The rules and comments pretty much talk about that. They don't add that qualifying language other than in one part of the rule. So, again, I would say the rule doesn't prohibit it, and I would suggest that some of the comments in the context would allow it. Anyway, I would strongly suggest I would at all times have subsidiary third-party letters that explain whose funds belong to who and so on. And Exhibits 15 through 21 admitted at the hearing are relevant post-2011 subsidiary ledgers. I beg you to closely review those. This isn't a situation where I was not accounting for money. It is a situation where non-representation funds that I was holding as a fiduciary were placed in the account, but this is not a situation where there was some confusion as to funds.
Just money from your mother?
That was the agreement that I had with her, that's correct. And Exhibit 15, actually there's an email from myself to my mother where we had talked about exactly what the terms of that was. She said, John, I want you to be able to use this money, but it's my money until you choose to do so. And secondly, she also directed me and she said, I may need it at some point. If that's the case, then you would spend it as I direct. So that was why I guess I decided to err on the side of caution. So, well, I'll put it in the trust account because it's her money. I couldn't put it in my accounts.
Was it related to the practice of law?
No. And I concede that. I concede that, but I, the argument is that
did you not put that in your own account?
Because, first of all, lawyers have to follow the rules when it comes to handling their personal affairs, and then there was that In Re Estate of Rob case, that Court of Appeals case.
So you borrowed money from a bank, you couldn't put that in your own account?
Well, that money would be mine at that point. Well, as opposed to the arrangement that I had with where that money was not mine at that point.
Until you used it.
Until I chose to use it, exactly. That's what she wanted to do. She felt comfortable and safe that way. I'm out of time. I don't know if you want me to continue or if I should just...
Well, if you're out of time, if there are no other questions, then we have to move on.
I understand.
Thank you very much. Mr. Austin, good morning to you.
Hey, please, the court. I'm Bill Austin. I'm the special prosecutor in this matter. I appear today on behalf of the relator, the Council for Discipline. As the court knows, this is a disciplinary matter. In March of 2016, an attorney with the Security and Exchange Commission notified the Nebraska Council for Discipline that they had reviewed some bank records that indicated that the respondent, Mr. John Nimmer, may have been using his trust account at American National Bank in Omaha for personal expenses. The Council for Discipline initiated an investigation. A review of the respondent's trust account records showed that on numerous occasions, the respondent had issued checks from his trust account for what appeared to be rent payments, payments to utility companies, payments for repairs, for car loan repayments, payments on behalf of his daughter, donations and other types of payments to his church, payments of Bar Association, and various and sundry other payments that appeared to have no relationship to the representation of a client. Further, the record shows that on at least two occasions, checks for what appeared to be loan funds in the amount of $10,000 or more from his mother, Polly Nimmer, were deposited into his trust account. Finally, on at least three occasions, hundreds of dollars of the respondent's own funds, more than needed to pay any bank service charges, were transferred into his trust account, apparently on behalf of his minor child. The respondent was formally charged with violating the safekeeping rule, with violating his oath of office, and with engaging in misconduct. A hearing was conducted on the charges on March 4, 2017, and the Honorable Paul Carsland found that commingling had occurred. He recommended a one-year suspension with 6 hours of continuing legal education and 2 years of probation. The respondent, as you know, has filed exceptions to the report and recommendations of the referee. Put it mildly, the respondent raises a plethora of issues and objections regarding receipt of evidence or the exclusion of evidence, due process, evidentiary rules of completeness, legal defenses, and interpretations of the applicable ethical rules. A number of these issues have already been ruled upon by this court in preliminary motions that were filed, and I believe that his objections on the various evidentiary issues have been addressed in the referee's report and relator's brief. I would like to focus on one of the substantive issues regarding the respondent's use of his trust account. The fundamental issue presented by this disciplinary proceeding is whether the aforementioned deposits and payments in and out of the respondent's trust account constituted commingling of funds in violation of the Nebraska Court Rule of Professional Conduct 3501.15. The frank and simple answer to that is that they do. I first addressed what I believe
is there, is there any way to mathematically tell, for example, if he paid his office rent from the trust account, whether that was equal to earned fees that would otherwise have simply been paid into his personal account and then, or his operational account and then paid for rent? Is there any way to tell that?
Not that I could find, Your Honor. The respondent indicated that he had destroyed all of his general and subsidiary ledgers regarding the trust account pre-2011, based upon his reading of the rule. So I think the simple answer is no, I cannot. We cannot determine it. I think that basically what we recognize or take for granted for purposes of this proceeding, that those expenditures out of this trust account did constitute either the loan funds from his mother or what he says were earned fees.
Once funds are commingled in a trust account, how can one discern, forensically, whether any client funds were misappropriated. How can that be determined once there's a commingling?
Well, I would suppose that if the records were available and you had a good forensic accountant, I suppose that they could make some determination in that regard.
Does there have to be an overdraft for a misappropriation to occur? And I guess what I'm getting at is the referee made a specific finding here that there was commingling but no misappropriation.
That's correct.
And I'd like your input on how the referee was defining misappropriation.
Well, I think he was defining it in terms of saying that if we could have determined that client funds had actually come out of that account through the transactions conducted by Mr. Nimmer, that would have been misappropriation.
Did he mean that the amount in the account that would have been attributable to ordinary client deposits, the conventional deposit of money on trust, never went below the amount that should have been there to protect that ordinary business?
As far as we know, that's the case, Your Honor. We could not determine that one way or the other, lacking the records on his trust account for those fees. But if there had been misappropriation, then I suggest to the court that the recommendation would have been far more stringent penalty than a suspension. What we saw here was simply commingling of the funds, which we believe in and of itself constitutes a violation of the safekeeping rule. For instance, with the loan funds, it's clear that he deposited loan funds into his trust account. On page 156 of Exhibit 7, you'll find the image of a check from Polly K. Nimmer to John Nimmer in the amount of $10,000. It bears the notation, quote, loan, unquote. On that same page, on that same exhibit, you'll find the deposit slip by Mr. Nimmer depositing this into his trust account. Likewise, on January 25th, 2013, on page 122 of Exhibit 5, there are two checks endorsed over to the respondent by his mother, Polly Nimmer, in the amount of $10,855.18. The funds also, as that same exhibit shows, were deposited into his attorney trust account. After all of these proceedings, the respondent has been rather creative in developing defenses and responses to these charges. His response to the handling of these loan funds is no different. He characterizes these as lines of credit. His argument goes that he accepted these funds in trust, placed them into his trust account, and then distributed them to himself or his mother only as needed, presumably acting as trustee. Therefore, he says, there was no commingling because the funds at all time remained the funds of Polly K. Nimmer. This, to me, brings to mind the old bromide that looks like a duck, and it walks like a duck, and it quacks like a duck, it's a duck. These were loans. Respondent may call these lines of credit, but they were pure and simple personal loans. He received a lump sum of the money. It was turned over to him for his own use. There were no safeguards, firewall restrictions. He did not even need to make a request to access these funds. They were his from the moment he received the check and put them into his trust account. Being his funds were placed into the trust account, there was a clear violation of subparagraph B of the Nebraska Rule of Professional Conduct 35115 that says, and I quote, a lawyer may deposit the lawyer's own funds in a client trust account for the sole purpose of paying bank service charges on that account, but only an amount necessary for that purpose. We believe that the deposit of the loan funds in the trust account constituted commingling.
How do you read our decision in Wright upon which the respondent relies?
Well, Your Honor, I think that in Wright, it does say that you do not have to immediately withdraw earned fees from the trust account, but I do think that, first of all, there is a reasonable time frame within which those ought to be withdrawn. But more importantly, I would suggest that the court that directly drawing on those funds for the purpose of paying personal expenses constitutes commingling. Now, in this situation, Mr. Nimmer drew directly on this account to pay rent, pay his church, pay car repairs. There are a variety of instances where he paid the check directly to a payee. What I would suggest to the court is that when you draw a check on a bank, you were saying to the payee of that check that I have my funds in that draw-e bank, and therefore you can go to get your money. And when he writes that check directly to payee, say for rent, he's saying, those are my funds there, and you're drawing on my funds. He has not made the segregation of funds that's necessary to say, as trustee, I have drawn them out and put them in my account, because now they are my funds in my account.
And the rest is the creditors then can reach those funds, or at least can try.
Exactly, Ron. I mean, I think that if the check bounced or whatever, they would be looking to that account to say, you know, this needs to be, or if the funds went below for any reason, it could be client funds that are being drawn on. So we believe that, contrary to Mr. Nimmer's assertion, that there is a problem. There is commingling when you draw directly. You can't use this account as an operating account as your own personal big bank for paying your expenses. We would ask the court to overrule the exceptions of Mr. Nimmer, to accept the report and recommendations of the referee, and to impose appropriate sanction. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We have no time for rebuttal. So, the court is adjourned and you are excused.